58. "You know something, Captain Joyce? This is bloody good gin." Flynn O'Flynn pointed the base of the glass at the ceiling, and in his eagerness to engulf the liquid, he did the same for the slice of lemon that the steward had placed in his glass. He gurgled like an air-locked geyser, his face changed swiftly to a deeper shade of red, and then he expelled the lemon, and with it a fine spray of gin and Indian tonic, in a burst of explosive coughing. "Are you all right?" Anxiously, Captain Joyce leapt across the cabin and began pounding Flynn between the shoulder blades. He had visions of his key tool in the coming operation being asphyxiated before they had started.
"Pips!" gasped Flynn. "Goddamn lemon pips!"
"Stuart!" Captain Joyce called over his shoulder without interrupting the tattoo he was playing on Flynn's back. "Bring the Major a glass of water. Hurry!"
"Water!"
wheezed Flynn in horror. And the shock was sufficient to diminish the strength of his paroxysm. The steward, who, from experience, could recognize a drinking man when he saw one, rose nobly to the occasion. He hurried across the cabin with a glass in his hand. A mouthful of the raw spirit effected a near miraculous cure. Flynn lay back in his chair, his face still bright purple, but his breathing easing. And Joyce withdrew to the far side of the cabin to inhale with relief the moist, warm, tropical air that oozed sluggishly through the open porthole. After a close-range whiff of Flynn's body smell, it was as sweet as a bunch of tulips. Flynn had been in the field for 6 weeks, and during that time it had not occurred to him to change his clothing. He smelt like a Rochefort cheese. There was a pause while everybody recovered their breath, then Joyce picked up where he had left off.
"I was saying, Major, how good it was of you to return so promptly to meet me here."
"I came the moment I received your message. The runner was waiting for us in Mtopo's village. I left my command camp south of the Rovuma and pushed through in force marches. 150 miles in 3 days, not bad going, eh?"
"Damn good show," agreed Joyce, and looked across at the other two men in the cabin for confirmation.
With the Portuguese governor's aide-de-camp was a young army lieutenant. Neither of them could understand a word of English. The aide-de-camp was wearing a politely non-committal expression, and the lieutenant had loosened the top button of his tunic and was lolling on the cabin's day couch with a little black cigarette drooping from his lips. Yet he contrived to look as gracefully insolent as a matador.
"The English captain asks that you recommend me to the governor for the Star of St. Peter," Flynn translated Captain Joyce's speech to the aide-de-camp. Flynn wanted a medal. He had been hounding the governor for one of these last 6 months.
"Will you please tell the English captain that I would be delighted to convey his written citation to the governor?" The aide-de-camp smiled blandly. Through their business association, he knew better than to take Flynn's translation literally. Flynn scowled at him, and Joyce sensed the strain in the cabin. He went on quickly. "I asked you here to meet me to discuss a matter of very great importance." He paused. 2 months ago, your scouts attacked a German supply column near the village of Kibiti."
"That's right," Flynn said, sat up in his chair. "A hell of a fight. We fought like madmen, hand-to-hand stuff."
"Quite," Joyce agreed quickly. "Quite so. With this column was a German naval officer."
"I didn't do it," interjected Flynn with alarm. "It wasn't me. He was trying to escape. You can't pin that one on me."
Joyce looked startled. "I beg your pardon?"
"He was shot trying to escape, and you try and prove different."
Flynn challenged him hotly. "Yes, I know. I have a copy of your report." "A pity. A great pity. We would dearly have liked to interrogate the man."
"You call me a liar."
"Good Lord, Major O'Flynn, nothing is further from my mind." Joyce was finding that conversation with Flynn O'Flynn was similar to feeling your way blindfolded through a hawthorn bush. "Your glass is empty. May I offer you a drink?" Flynn's mouth was open to emit further truculent denials,
but the offer of hospitality took him unawares, and he subsided.
"Thank you. It's damn good gin. Haven't tasted anything like it in years. I don't suppose you could spare a case or two."
Again, Joyce was startled. "I'm sure the wardroom secretary will be able to arrange something for you."
"Bloody good stuff," said Flynn, and sipped at his recharged glass.
Joyce decided on a different approach.
"Major O'Flynn, have you heard of a German warship, a cruiser named Blücher?"
"Have I, hell!" bellowed Flynn, with such vehemence that Joyce was left in no doubt that he had struck another jarring note. "The bastard sank me!"
These words conjured up in the eye of Captain Joyce's mind a brief but macabre picture of a Flynn floating on his back while a battle cruiser fired on him with 9-inch guns.
"Thank you?" asked Joyce.
"Rammed me. There I was, sailing along in this dhow, peacefully as anything, when up she comes and bang, right up the arse."
"I see," murmured Joyce.
"Was it intentional?"
"You bloody tootin' it was."
"Why?"
"Well," started Flynn, and then changed his mind, "it's a long story."
"Where did this happen?"
"About 50 miles off the mouth of the Rufiji River."
"The Rufiji?" Joyce leaned forward eagerly. "Do you know it? Do you know the Rufiji Delta?"
"Do I know the Rufiji Delta?" chuckled Flynn. "I know it like the way you know your own thunderbox. I used to do a lot of business there before the war."
"Excellent. Wonderful." Joyce could not restrain himself from pursing his lips and whistling the first 2 bars of Tipperary. From him, this was expression of unadulterated joy.
"Yeah? What's so wonderful about that?"
Flynn was immediately suspicious.
"Major O'Flynn, on the basis of your report, naval intelligence considers it highly probable that the Blücher is anchored somewhere in the Rufiji Delta."
"Who are you kidding? The Blücher was sunk months ago. Everybody knows that."
"Presumed sunk. She and the 2 British warships that pursued her disappeared off the face of the earth, or more correctly, the ocean. Certain pieces of floating wreckage were recovered that indicated that a battle had been fought by the 3 ships. It was thought that all 3 had gone down." Joyce paused and smoothed the grey wings of hair along his temples. "But now it seems certain that Blücher was badly damaged during the engagement, and that she was holed up in the Delta."
"Those wheels! Steel plating for repairs!"
"Precisely, Major, precisely. But," Joyce smiled at Flynn, "thanks to you, they did not get the plating through."
"Yes, they did,"
Flynn growled a denial.
"They did?" demanded Joyce harshly.
"Yeah, we left them lying in the veldt. My spies told me that after we had gone, the Germans sent another party of bearers up there and took them away."
"Why didn't you prevent it?"
"What the hell for? They've got no value,"
Flynn retorted. "The enemy's insistence must have demonstrated their value."
"Yeah, the enemy were so insistent, they sent up a couple of Maxim guns with a second party. In my book, the more Maxims that are guarding something, the less value it has."
"Well, why didn't you destroy them while you had the chance?"
"Listen, friend, how do you reckon to destroy 20 tons of steel? Swallow it, perhaps."
"Do you realize just what a threat this ship will become once it's seaworthy?"
Joyce hesitated.
"I tell you now, in strict confidence, that there will be an invasion of German East Africa in the very near future. Can you imagine the havoc if Blücher were to slip out of the Rufiji and get among the troop convoys?"
"Yeah, all of us have got troubles."
"Major!" The captain's voice was hoarse with the effort of checking his temper. "Major, I want you to do a reconnaissance and locate the Blücher for us."
"Is that so?" boomed Flynn. "You want me to go galloping round in the Delta, where there's a Maxim behind every mangrove tree? It might take a year to search that Delta. You've got no idea what it's like in there."
That won't be necessary. Joyce swiveled his chair. He nodded at the Portuguese lieutenant. This officer is an aviator.
What's that mean?
He is a flyer.
Yeah? Is that so good? I did a bit of a sleeping around when I was young. Still get it up now and then.
Joyce coughed.
He flies an aircraft. A flying machine.
Oh, said Flynn. He was impressed. Geez, is that so?
He looked at the Portuguese lieutenant with respect. With the cooperation of the Portuguese army, I intend conducting an aerial reconnaissance of the Rufiji Delta.
You mean flying over it in a flying machine?
Precisely.
That's a bloody good idea, Flynn was enthusiastic.
When can you be ready?
What for?
For the reconnaissance.
Now just hold on a shake, friend.
Flynn was aghast. You're not getting me into one of those flying things.
2 hours later, they were still arguing on the bridge of HMS Renounce, as Joyce conned her back towards the land to deposit Flynn and the two Portuguese on the beach, from which his launch had picked them up that morning. The British cruiser steamed over a sea that was oil-slick calm and purple-blue, and the land lay as a dark, irregular line on the horizon. It is essential that someone who knows the Delta flies with the pilot. He has just arrived from Portugal, besides which he will be fully occupied in piloting the machine. He must have an observer. Joyce was trying again. Flynn had lost all interest in the discussion. He was now occupied with weightier matters.
Captain, he started, and Joyce recognized the new tone of his voice and turned to him hopefully. Captain, that other business, what about it?
I'm sorry, I don't follow you.
The gin you promised me, what about it?
Captain Arthur Joyce, R.N., was a man of gentle men. His face was smooth and unlined, his mouth full but grave, his eyes thoughtful. The streaks of silver grey at his temples gave him dignity. There was only one pointer to his true temperament. His eyebrows grew in one solid continuous line across his face. They were as thick and furry across the bridge of his nose as they were above his eyes. Despite his appearance, he was a man of dark and violent temper. 10 years on his own bridge, wielding the limitless power and authority of a royal naval captain, had not mellowed him, but had taught him how to use the curb on his temper. Since early that morning, when he had first shaken Flynn O'Flynn's large hairy paw, Arthur Joyce had been exercising every bit of restraint he possessed. Now he had exhausted it all. Flynn found himself standing speechless beneath the full blaze of Captain Joyce's anger. In a staccato, low-pitched speech, Arthur Joyce told him his opinion of Flynn's courage, character, reliability, drinking habits, and sense of personal hygiene. Flynn was shocked and deeply hurt.
"Listen," he said.
"You listen," said Joyce. "Nothing will give me more pleasure than to see you leave this ship. And when you do, you can rest content in the knowledge that a full report of your conduct will go to my superiors, with copies to the Governor of Mozambique and the Portuguese War Office."
"Hold on," cried Flynn. Not only was he going to leave the cruiser without the gin, but he could imagine that the wording of Joyce's report would ensure that he never got that medal. They might even withdraw his commission. In this moment of terrible stress, the solution came to him.
"There is one man, only one man who knows the Delta better than I do. He's young, plenty of guts, and he's got eyes like a hawk."
Joyce glared at him, breathing hard, as he fought to check the headlong run of his rage.
"Who?"
he demanded.
"My own son," intoned Flynn. It sounded better than son-in-law.
"Will he do it?"
"He'll do it. I'll see to that," Flynn assured him.